Today's episode is brought to you by Wise, the account that helps you manage your money around the world, which is huge for travelers. I've been a customer and a fan for 10 years. The Wise account helps you send, spend, and receive in different currencies fast, and they do it all without hidden fees or exchange rate markups. This service has been so critical for me in my life as a traveler, as a nomad, as somebody living abroad. And you can join 16 million customers and learn how the Wise account can help you out on the road at wise.com/travel. That's Wise, WISE.com/travel, or download the app. This episode of Zero to Travel is brought to you by the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder with 7 drive modes. The Pathfinder's available intelligent 4x4 is built for even the most epic journeys. Learn more at NissanUSA.com.
For me, that's the benefit of travel, that we are one-on-one, face-to-face with people, and it's about having a conversation with them. And that's something that is really going missing from our daily lives, simply talking to one another. It's been, you know, output to social media and that kind of thing, and that's really not done a number on our interactions with each other. So I think that's where travel is just magic, just talking to strangers and finding out about them and how you can really make that a part of your travel, build that into your travel. So that's a part of it.
That is the one and only Samantha Brown, our guest today, who is no stranger to talking to strangers out on the road. She has had massive success doing just that as a travel television host over the last 2+ decades, a career that has taken her to over 250 cities in 74 countries and 44 of the United States. She's currently the host of PBS's 2-time Emmy award-winning series, Samantha Brown's Places to Love, just returned for its 7th season. We're going to talk about that today and much more around her journey to becoming a successful travel expert and television host. She talks about some of the biggest lessons she learned while struggling to make it for many years before she got her first gig with the Travel Channel as a host. And she talks about the buffer she gave herself, which I think is a really amazing concept that anybody can apply to their life. She shares how to build rapport, ask better questions, and connect with anybody, which we want to be able to do as travelers. And that's a huge part of her job as a travel television host, to make these authentic connections, to get people comfortable to share their story on camera. It's no small feat. Samantha's an expert at it, and she shares her advice so we can connect with locals and connect with a place while we're traveling. So you're going to hear that. And what is she actually doing behind the scenes? Well, she's going to tell you in this conversation and why what she's doing has been so critical to the success of her shows over the years. She shares some advice on balancing career and family life. Just a whole bunch of incredible stuff going on. Of course, destinations and travel talk. It's all happening right now in this episode. So buckle up, strap in. Thanks for being here. And welcome to the Zero to Travel podcast, my friend.
You're listening to the Zero to Travel podcast, where we explore exciting travel-based work, lifestyle, and business opportunities, helping you to achieve your wildest travel dreams. And now your host, world wanderer and travel junkie, Jason Moore.
Hey, what's up? It's Jason here with ZeroToTravel.com. Welcome to the show, my friend. Thanks for hanging out, letting me bring a little travel into your ears today. This is the show to help you travel the world on your terms, to fill your life with as much travel as you desire, no matter what your situation or experience. I want to welcome back all of the listeners here and welcome new listeners for anybody tuning in for the first time. Pleasure to have you as part of this global community. I haven't thrown this out in a while, but get in touch anytime. This is a two-way conversation. This is a community, so you can always reach out. Jason@zerototravel.com is my email. And of course, you can leave me a voicemail. I leave a link to that voicemail box in all the show notes. And we have a free newsletter too, zerototravel.com/newsletter. You can sign up over there. Now, today, we have none other than the incredible, the incomparable, the wonderful, the lovely Samantha Brown. You can check out her website for all the goodies, samantha-brown.com. What a conversation. I greatly admire her work and her 2+ decades of helping to inspire people to travel the world, to get out and see the world. That is a huge part, of course, of our mission here at Zero to Travel. And it was such a privilege to get to chat with her and to learn more about her life, her journey. And as usual, I feel like there are a lot of life lessons to pull out of this one that you can carry with you beyond the conversation. And she also shares, I think this was my favorite part of our conversation, an act of kindness that stuck with her. This one gave me the chills to hear this story. And all of that, plus the other stuff and much more coming your way in this conversation now. So please enjoy it. Stick around on the back end. I'll leave you with a little quote from Samantha to wrap this up. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show. Cheers.
That's
all.
他早的那些。I
am here with the host of PBS's two-time Emmy award-winning series, Samantha Brown's Places to Love, which is returning for its seventh season. Samantha Brown, travel legend. Welcome to the Zero to Travel podcast, my friend. How you doing?
Very good. How are you doing? Or is that okay to ask yet? Is it?
That's a loaded question.
I understand.
No, I know. I'm having one of those days where I have a 5 and 7 year old, Samantha, and I'm having one of those days where I feel like, am I the worst parent that ever walked the face of the earth? Like all of it just kind of came together in a way where I'm just like, you have kids that are a bit older than mine, so maybe you can share some advice, or, you know, have you had days like that?
Yeah, I think for the first 5 years of, I have twins, so they just turned 11. For the first 5 years, I would wake up every day going, okay, today's a new day and I'm going to be better. And then by the end of the day, I was like, oh my gosh, you know, you feel like a failure on so many levels. And luckily those kids forgive you. And I'm a big advocate of apologizing to your kids and just saying, hey, that wasn't my best moment, guys. I'm sorry you had to see that. You don't deserve that. And kind of move on. And they're like, okay, you know. But yeah, it's a live and learn in parenting. We don't learn it anywhere, do we? And it's not as natural as people think it is.
I know travel is such a great tool for self-development. You know, it's one of those sneaky self-development tools. But then parenting takes that to a whole other level, maybe, you know, like it's like looking in a mirror all the time. And sometimes my kids are doing something that, and then I'm like, wait, I think they learned that from me. Like that. Yeah. Oh no. Twins is, I mean, I can't imagine having two young kids at the same time in that way where you're like, you know, the during the sleep deprived stages with two and going, like, what was that like?
Yeah. Thankfully, I didn't know anything differently, right? I didn't have a single before I had twins. So it was just, it's what you had to do. And I learned to live off of about 4 hours of sleep pretty soon. But then they acclimated, like those years start to go away and then other things come in. But two of them, like right now we're in bliss. I mean, it's just bliss, right? They've got their little partner. It's fantastic. But for the first, I would say 4 years, I don't remember the first 6 months, honestly, of you know, nursing, and because I was still traveling. I started traveling about 2 months after they were born. And so, yeah, it's an intense, it's an intense journey and totally worth it. Totally worth it.
Have you had days like that on the set where, I mean, you've been doing this for over 20 years now, but where you know, same kind of feeling where you're like, oh, I just feel like the worst, you know, I'm not killing it today. Like it's just, you know, I shouldn't be on. Have you had days like that? And how do you kind of pick yourself up from your bootstraps on those days?
I definitely still have days like that where I'm just like, wow, I am not doing it. I am not showing up with great questions. I'm not, I just feel like I'm a little lacking. And then luckily it's filmed. And so when I see it, I'm like, oh, I was being really hard on myself. So I feel like there's a, certainly in the beginning of my career, I was really new and I was very hard on myself because I did take my job seriously and what I could contribute while on camera. But now it's, I feel really confident. I love meeting everyone I get to meet. And then in the end, I'm like, okay, yeah, you need to be a little easier on yourself. So
I wanted to hear a little bit more about the lead up time in your life to getting that first gig? Because on your website, you said you moved to New York City with your cat to pursue this dream of being on stage. And then you said, quote, not surprisingly, this led to 8 years of waiting tables, auditioning in various roles in off-Broadway and off-Broadway productions. Can you talk a little bit about those 8 years, the struggles of pursuing a dream? What did you learn during that whole process? What did you take from that, do you think?
Just persistence and resilience. So I went to school for musical theater. I got, you know, a formal degree in basically the performing arts. And so you spend a lot of money, a lot of time, and then you move to New York City and you realize you are nothing. I mean, you're just this little peon. But slowly but surely, you start to, you know, learn the ropes and you take hard knocks and, you know, literally pounding the pavement and submitting your headshot. I don't even know if they still do these things anymore. Waking up at 5 a.m. to line up to audition to get an audition time, and then waiting on tables. And, you know, it was definitely a challenge, but I was going to give it 10 years. And after that, I thought, well, I need to move on because I'm not doing what I set out to do. And by the eighth year, I got my shot. And that's what I kept hearing again and again. People are like, if you stick with it, you will get your shot and you've got to be ready for it. But it'll come, and then things could, you know, might hopefully change. So that's what I worked towards, and I wasn't the overnight success, and I wasn't the star of my, you know, college years. I wasn't any of that. I was actually pretty, you know, middle ground. But what I took from that, and what is amazing about having an acting background, is that when you're an actor, you have someone else you are acting with, right? And your intention is always in the other person. It is never yourself. And so your tactics are always about that other person and getting what you want through that other person and what tactics you use. And I still use that today. Like people are like, oh, you're acting that you like travel? No, I'm not acting. But I understand that in the end, the show isn't about me. It's about the other person. And so I took a lot from those years, and that I basically earned it on my own. I didn't have, you know, my mom and dad weren't in production. They weren't, they weren't in any part of this business, but I did it and I got there.
Yeah. I think that's a big takeaway for people listening. It's just like that. It's so easy in this day and age to kind of think in, you know, even like a 3-year chunk that seems like so much time, but to give yourself a buffer of 10 years to make it in something, That's a huge reframe.
Mm-hmm. I mean, but you think about it, it's your whole life though. And those 8 years were really tough, but then I got to live the rest of my years up until right now, as I'm talking to you, doing the best job. I never imagined my life would be this good. And so that takes time, but that time is always worth it, always.
You mentioned a bit earlier talking about in presenting and relating it to being an actor and being able to focus on the other person. I think I agree. I mean, that takes a lot of pressure off yourself, I think, to perform. But in terms of travel and what you share, how do you toe the line between putting the right words to it, but also getting out of the way so people can have the experience? It's very tricky, especially in the format that you work in, I think, because you have the visual aspects, of course, but also you have a big responsibility there to juggle, to kind of take people there as much as you can, but then get out of the way at the right times. How does that work for you in the process of it? Is it kind of like a in the moment type of thing? Are you rehearsing through it before you go into a scene? How does that?
I definitely plan. I definitely do as much research as I possibly can about a person, about a culture, sort of, you know, the big picture things, and then the really small, you know, items of people's lives, just so I have great questions. Because I've always found when people ask me a good question that I'm not getting asked, like I understand when people are like, oh, what's your favorite country? But then I just kind of go into a rote, right? It's just a question I've gotten my whole life. But if they ask me like anything about my crew, like how many people do you travel with and what do they like about the travel experience? Oh, well now you've perked my interest. Now I get to answer something that I'm not normally answering. And so when I'm with people who are clearly going to be on camera with me, they know they're going to be on camera with me like 3 weeks to a month before, I make sure I know what that question is. And so we can have, and a lot of times people, you know, I take my job seriously. I'm a host. And as like the host of a party, it's my job to make people feel comfortable being in our party because they've got big cameras on them. They've got two cameras, a boom, like it can be a really intimidating experience. So a lot of the behind the scenes is me being just normal with them. So they feel at ease with me, that they can talk to me and that I have done the research and I know a little bit about them. And then they open up. And one thing we like to do is I'll just start talking to them, knowing that this is where we're going to kind of start the scene. And I'll just kind of give a nod to my cameraman and he'll start rolling and the people won't even know. And then they're just much more relaxed because it is about them. And I always give them a pep talk because I can always tell when people are really nervous about this. Like all of a sudden they think it's like a YouTube or a social, you know, media thing. And we come in with big serious cameras and lighting and everything. And they're like, oh. And so I always tell them, this is about you, but I'm the one who's going to take all the responsibility to make you look great. So don't worry. You don't have to, you're just, I'm going to answer the questions and we're going to get into it. Just leave that to me. That is my job. None of this responsibility is on you. You just get to shine. And then they're like, oh, okay. Cause all of a sudden it's like, oh wow. I didn't know it was all about this. I'm like, doesn't matter. This is my responsibility. You just get to be you. And we're here just to capture who you are. And then they start to understand that it's a really important moment for them as well. And so that's the great part of my job.
It is easy to stiffen up with a bunch of lights and cameras mm-hmm. and booms and all that
kind of
stuff.
I still do. So, yeah.
Well, you have to bring a show element too. So that's why I'm just putting myself in your shoes and thinking how many things are out of balance. But then I think the psychological component you're referring to or the building of rapport off camera. I mean, those types of things can translate. If you're going to share some advice here to travelers looking to build rapport, connect with some locals so they can become more ingratiated in the local community and their time there. What are some of those things that you do to kind of put people at ease? I'm just curious.
Well, I'm lucky that, especially in the United States, a lot of people already know my work, right? So that I have that huge, huge benefit that they know me. They've watched me. If they have no idea who I am, we give them shows to watch so they understand the show, the places to love sort of kind of, you know, ethos. But it is, and it's not just me, it's my whole team who makes them feel comfortable. Because production crew can be really intense and they can be in their own world. And we all sort of know we're here to rally around this person, this business, and really show them off. So it's about a kindness that we extend to them with all of us from my director. But also we do, which I really appreciate because it's something we didn't do with Travel Channel when I was a host with that channel, is we have a big pre-production stage. So my husband, who's an executive producer of the show, as well as my director, separately, they never travel together, but they'll fly down maybe a month, 6 weeks before we go to a place, and they meet a lot of people. So if we have 8 or 9 segments, they see about 15 different segments, potential segments, and then we whittle it down from there. But there's already a person-to-person contact before I show up. And then we're talking to them before, making sure we're coming at the right time. But then, and then this is sort of the real big nuance of it. We do so much work, and then we let it go. So when we show up, you know, I have my notes and I just kind of look at it, but I'm not like an interviewer going, okay, did I get that? It's like, now we've done all the work. We're going to trust it's there and we're just going to let this fly. And because we do still want that spontaneity, we still do want, I don't want to give them a list of questions to be prepared for. This is about really capturing a moment and the energy of just like when you travel, that sort of spontaneity and the serendipity of travel. And so that's something that's really important for us to. So there's a lot of planning, a lot of research, and then boom, we just go. So
is that you leaning into your intuitive side in some ways now that you've absorbed it kind of through the planning stage and you're like, all right, let's just kind of let go? And
definitely.
There's a bit of a power in just letting go too, you know, in that attitude, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. And I found, like, especially when I started to do my European travel, and again, this was more my Travel Channel days, and I was so new, I would spend so much time learning about people. I would be in Paris reading in my hotel room about Paris instead of just like walking around, because I thought I had to know everything. I thought I had to not only know the questions I was going to ask, but the answers that they were going to give me. And now I know that I'm going to research this to a point, but then I'm going to let them allow me to discover and really reach out to them. Because if I found that if I know everything, then I just start really controlling the conversation. And I don't want that. I still want for me to be really inquisitive and really that act of discovery, which is a wonderful moment to be in with travel.
I mean, you're killing it, I would say. you're doing it. We'll get back to the interview in just a moment. This episode of Zero to Travel is presented by the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. From muddy jungle paths and snowy trails to rolling sand dunes, the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder has the capability to take you to some of the most epic destinations on Earth. We're excited to partner with Nissan because our listeners know we love to celebrate the joy of exploring the world and finding the best off the beaten path destinations to visit. And there's no better vehicle for that than the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. With 7 drive modes, the Pathfinder's available intelligent 4x4 is built for even the most epic journeys, and it even has the best towing capacity in its class, up to 6,000 pounds, so you can bring the fun with you. But Nissan also knows that it's not just about where you go. In a Pathfinder, the real fun comes from getting there, and that's something we love celebrating here on the Zero to Travel podcast. We believe that life is about finding that joy within the journey itself, and that's why we're thrilled to partner with Nissan to celebrate adventurers everywhere. So thanks again to Nissan for sponsoring this episode of Zero to Travel and for the reminder to chase bigger, better, more exciting adventures and enjoy the ride along the way. Learn more at NissanUSA.com. If you love coffee like me, let me tell you how you can get an incredible cup of coffee, whether you're at home or on the road. You can use what I use, which is the AeroPress. Have you seen this? This is a device that uses a patented 3-in-1 brew technology. It combines the flavor benefits of espresso, pour over, and French press into one compact, portable device built for travel or home. The AeroPress has over 55,000 five-star reviews in 60 countries, plus it's the best reviewed coffee press on the planet. That tells you something, and it makes an incredible gift. Under $50. Get one for yourself or somebody you care about. Pick yours up at aeropress.com/zero to travel. That's AeroPress, AeroPress.com/zero to travel. Use the promo code zero to travel, all one word, to save 20% off your order. That's 20% off. Thank you to AeroPress for the delicious coffee and for supporting today's show. Now, back to the show. What is the biggest mistake you ever made on set, and what did you learn from it?
I feel like, and I don't know what they specifically are, because I don't know if I have the guts to go back and look, but I hope I was always culturally appropriate. I know who I am. I know the color of my skin. I know the privilege I've been given. And a lot of times we have no idea when we go into situations if what we're doing is offensive. If I was based off of, you know, just, you know, stereotypes that I kind of grew up with, and this is whether I'm traveling to Latin America or Asia or anywhere. And I just hope I was always someone who was open to those cultures and not in any way offensive. I love humor. And so I work a lot with comedy. And so if I was inappropriate, it was probably because I was trying to make a joke and the joke wasn't funny to other people. And I don't know what the specifics are, but I just feel like that would be the mistakes where I slowly, maybe, hopefully more steadily than slowly, but realized, oh, I'm not the only culture who's going to infer this through. And I need to be more respectful and really be very much more open to other people's experiences in these situations, you know? It's just that kind of thing of just realizing that even though I'm kind of representing the traveler, I am just representing a very specific type of traveler. And there are places where I can go that other people can't, maybe based on their own skin color, or there's ways that I'm being treated that other people won't be treated. And it's just that kind of understanding. So
I had a buddy on the podcast yesterday, and we traveled together a long time ago, like in the late 90s. He was telling me a story that he read from his journal, which was super embarrassing. It was something with us, and it was horrible. And I was like, are you reading this about another person? But it was actually me, almost 30 years ago. You get wiser. My mom always said, like, you don't age, but you get wiser, like, in your head. You know what I mean? You still feel, like, what age do you feel in your head right now?
Yeah. I feel 35.
Yeah. Okay.
And I'm not. Yeah.
When you were on those 4 hours a night sleep, it was probably a little bit different.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Exactly. Yes. So true. Yeah. I think if there was a mistake that I made, it was trying to be funny at a time that probably didn't warrant it. You know, I didn't always have to make the joke. I didn't have to be. I think as an American, I'm very sarcastic as well, and that's a very different type of humor. So I was like, oh, not everyone gets your sarcasm. Yeah.
I live in Norway. My wife is Norwegian, and although, yeah, on the surface, I feel like people, they think it's so close to the American culture. You know, it's practically the same, but it's not. It's not. I mean, the sarcasm runs deep in America, in a good way. I miss the American banter. You know.
Yes.
You don't get that everywhere.
I feel like what most people don't get about Americans is that we can take a hit. Like you can make fun of us all you want. And so maybe that was my mistake. I thought I could make fun of other, like, and you can't. No. But I'm like, you could. You know, just like, that's why I was loved, like, when John Stewart, I'm like, we love that. Like, just make fun of us. Like, we make fun of you. You make fun of us. This is the love. It's all love. Right. But yes, I get it. I also know, so you're in Norway. Someone from Norway really called me out. They said, I can't stand when Americans pronounce it Oslo instead of Oslo. I'm like, oh yeah, I guess I do say Oslo. But I also think it's because how we hear it, because the S is a little harder, right? It's like an Oslo. And so as an American, we will transfer that to a Z, you know, but that's, I'm like, oh yeah. So I make a lot of mistakes in pronunciation and people get very upset. So yeah.
Now, you know what? I'm taking your side on that one. Forget that guy. That's just petty language nonsense. Come on. I can say that now because I'm a Norwegian citizen. So I can just be like, I mean, you give me his address, Samantha. Yeah. I'll go down and talk to him tomorrow if you need me to.
Well, I mean, it's funny because I always thought with, you know, pronunciations, I'm like, we all have a different way of speaking. And it's not simply just pronouncing something correctly. It's how something registers in your mouth, where it fits in the palate. I mean, it's a whole way that we all speak. And if someone from Britain says New York, I don't say it's New York. Like I get it. Like, yeah, I get that you're from somewhere else and you're pronouncing it New York. Like, that's okay. But anyway.
Well, you also grew up on the East Coast, so you have that little extra level of sarcasm built in, right? Because I'm from outside of Philly, and I know that's like a thing. If there's something about the East Coast hustle mentality, like just the kind of the busting each other's chops, you know, it's hard to slow down sometimes as an East Coaster. Do you find that? Like, you go into some cultures and you're just like, I mean, you live in New York. So I used to live in Colorado. I'd walk in behind somebody once and they were a New Yorker and they were like, everybody moves so slow here. This is ridiculous. And I was totally on West Coast vibes then. I was like, all right, just settle down, New Yorker, relax.
Exactly. Know your place too. I mean, as a New Yorker, I understand, like, you're not in New York anymore. You're not. When someone comes up and asks you if you need help, they're actually working. Like, when you live in New York City and you're in a supermarket, no one asks you if you're looking for something or if they could help. That just doesn't happen here. So when you go outside of New York and people come up to you, you're like, what? Oh yeah. Where's your shampoo? Like we have such an exterior that we hold on to. So
that's true. I always feel complimented when I'm in New York and somebody's like aggressive with me in like a way that it's like New York polite. They're slightly aggressive, polite, but that's them being super polite. you know, because they're talking to you in the first place.
That's true. They are giving you the time of day, right?
Do you like living in the city? I mean, you've been there for a while now, haven't you? Have you ever thought about getting out? Or
no, I've been here 35 years, and moved here from New Hampshire, so a very, very, very different upbringing. And I always thought, oh, I would leave when I had kids, and then you realize, oh, New York City is phenomenal for children. There's so much access here, and yeah, there's crime, and it's dirty, and it's loud, but the world is here, and the museums, and if something doesn't work, there's 15 other things they can do. And that's, for me, growing up in New Hampshire, I knew that that wasn't it. Like, if I didn't make my friends with my class, that was it. If I didn't go into that sport, that was it, you know? And so I do love it here. I really do. And I have, you know, they're the craziest airports, but I have two international airports, you know, so everything's a direct flight. So I don't think I could leave that.
Yeah, kind of important for your job, I would
kind
say.
Kind of, yeah.
It's convenient.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned your hometown. I'm not sure when the last time you were back there was. And you went back to your hometown and did an episode in this new season at your hometown, I believe, in your hometown, right? Where you grew up, or where you spent your formative years, as you say. What was that like, going back there and filming and doing your whole thing? That must have been, talk about pause and reflect type of scenario, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What was that like for you?
It's a really great experience to go back to a place that, I mean, so my whole family still lives in the seacoast area of New Hampshire, and to go back there but to approach it professionally and as an outsider I kind of advocate for everyone to do that about their own hometown and explore things that they're not used to going to, because we all get in our, you know, sort of our, you know, our rituals. And but it was wonderful going back, and because one of the focuses of Places to Love is to always find the diversity in a place, right? To really question if we're getting the full picture, if we're getting the full narrative, if there's like just one group who gets to tell the story, who else gets to tell that story, who else has a perspective of that. And New Hampshire, I mean, it's a white community. It's a white state. I grew up when it was incredibly, there was no diversity. But to see how it's changed in wonderful ways. So, for instance, my father lives in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, beautiful seacoast town, beautiful. And there's been a cafe there for, I don't know, the last 10 years called Cup of Joe's. And there's so many coffee shops that this one I had actually not been in. And we found out through our research that Cup of Joe's is owned by a woman named Joanne Kelly, who is a Black woman who also grew up in foster care in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, but had a good experience and wanted to give back to her community. And she became the assistant mayor of Portsmouth. So not only does she own this wonderful cafe, people come in and I said, well, do people come in and air their grievances? She's like, absolutely, all the time, as they should. She's like, I feel like as a person who has a responsibility to the city that people should have access to me. And she's in her 30s. And so she's really changing the dynamic, just being who she is, that she owns a business in downtown Portsmouth. Not an easy feat. It's an expensive city. It's a big tourism destination, but also a pretty wealthy city in New Hampshire. So that storefront. So it's just things like that. And even beyond, there's an amazing jazz club now. And I went back to places where, I mean, I must have gone as a first grader on a field trip and never cared for a second of it. But all of a sudden, I'm transfixed as an adult of the industry that was in the area. So, you know, we see things in different ways through our ages. And it's always good to, I feel like it's always great to be home. And I've been back again and again. I go back, you know, three times a year, but I've never been back as who I am as a host and as a traveler. So it was really neat to see it through that perspective.
That's an amazing story. I mean, I was just thinking, should every politician own a coffee shop in the heart of town? I feel like that's a good move for society, right? It's just like all the town folk can come in, and town folk, is that still, they still use that word?
I understand. Yeah. Yeah. It's very, very, yeah, exactly. It's like, I'll take a cup of coffee, a scone, and I've got something to say about that mandate for the bike lanes, you know? But, I think it, you know, but I loved it. And so with our show, what we're always trying to do is, I try to stay away from being an itinerary show. Like, now I'm going here. Now I'm going there. Now I'm having this. Now I'm eating that. We really weave a story. We're telling the story of a place. And it's a small story. It's not the whole story, but it's a perspective that it really shows that these places that we visit, and we're travelers or tourists or whatever you want to call yourselves, it's where people live. It's where people worship. It's where people raise their families. And we have to remember that when we're somewhere, we're not just consumers, right? Because I think as travelers, we get into that rut that we're always consumers. We're consuming of everything. But that you can really change your perspective and where you go and who you visit and where you spend your money to really be more part of that community. So where is that community? And that's who we focus on. And it's always things that travelers can absolutely participate in. So that was like, I don't have experiences that people can't have, right? I don't have VIP experiences that totally unavailable to anybody else. Like, we really want to make sure that when you watch our show, these are things that you get to do. When you walk through that door, that person that I talk to is who you're going to see. There's a real, an experience that, yeah, and someone, I just heard this. I'm like, oh, I guess that's true, that travel is one of the few things that we spend a lot of money on before we know what we're buying, right? We put all of our money down in hotels and airfare, and we don't know. And so I always like that fact that our show kind of gives you a taste of what you know, the type of trip you could have, and one that, more importantly, will benefit that community. That money stays in the community. It's helping the community. And yeah, so we're less of an itinerary show, a travel log, and more of just really great storytelling, but everyone can become a part of that story.
Yeah, beautiful. I love that. I mean, that's, any traveler listening can have the same intention going into a town, right? That all is sparked from the intention you have to tell a story and to get to know the people and to get under the skin of it. And that, to me, that starts with the intention of going in, right? If the intention is to kind of check off a bunch of sites you're going to see, well, yeah, of course you can do that. And I think we've all done that. But also, there is something about getting deeper, I suppose, as much as you can, which isn't always easy, you know? Every place is different. I have never heard that expression of travel is one thing you buy that you don't know what you're getting. Isn't that what makes it exciting? Like, you don't know what you're getting.
Yeah, I agree. But I also think that there's a layer of depth that we get to that I don't think people would know is even available to them, or that they could actually have more face-to-face interaction with people. Because I think that's, for me, that's the benefit of travel, that we are one-on-one, face-to-face with people. And it's about having a conversation with them. And that's something that is really going missing from our daily lives, simply talking to one another, right? It's been, you know, output to social media and that kind of thing. And that's really not done a number on our interactions with each other. So I think that's where travel is just magic. Just talking to strangers and finding out about them, and how you can really make that a part of your travel, build that into your travel. So that's a part of it.
I know you are with your crew and everything, but do you enjoy the solo travel aspect of it when you have time on your own and you spend a lot of days on the road? Is that something that gets you excited about going out?
Oh gosh, yes. I mean, as a mom of twins, like being in a hotel room alone is like, it's like, I don't even care if it doesn't even need to be a luxury hotel. I'm like, give me a basic chain hotel and I'll have, oh, such a nice night. I love being alone. And I always, and I am mainly with a crew, but there's always one day in each destination where we have time off and we all go our separate ways. And I will spend the whole day alone, and I love it, because when you're alone, you don't have your sort of partner in crime. And so you open yourself up to more people, and people open themselves up to you. And it's interesting. It's always this, well, but women, are you safe? Are you safe? Are you safe? And I understand it's of course, a huge topic of concern, but I've always felt safe. Even in places where people, don't go alone, I've been alone. And I'm just more aware, and I've had such a beautiful time with people, just kind of talking and I love it. I love being alone because you get to do whatever you want to do. That was for me, like, people are like, what do you think the trends are for, like, you know, every year you get, what are the trends? I'm like, I don't know. I don't think of travel as trends. You know, everyone's doing the, whatever that orchid show is, everyone wants to go there. I always thought a trend would be that everyone should do a solo travel trip, whether it's just a weekend, if you know, because being alone is wonderful. And I think travel and being alone, and again, it doesn't have to be this like 10,000 mile journey away. It could just be like, oh, you know, I'm going to go 2 hours from my home, I'm going to stay in a hotel, and I'm just going to be by myself, because I think there's so much to be learned in that silence and solitude about yourself. And then travel, and you combine it with travel, which really opens you up to other, you know, other places, other things. You're not surrounded by what's familiar. Like, all of a sudden, you know, if you're having problems, I would say new solutions are allowed to get through, because those walls, you know, that are meant to protect you actually also stop things from happening as well. And when you travel, you're not surrounded by what you know. And so other things get through. And so it's this really powerful moment. And that's really hard to have when you're taking care of a 5-year-old and a 7-year-old or with your partner or anything like that. So being alone gives you that really important time to let other things get to you, let other things start to have a direct contact with your brain, which we don't allow because we're too busy.
We'll get back to the interview in just a moment. Here's a quick powerful exercise. If you think about one or two of your big goals, and then you fast forward a few months from now, what can you do right now to give yourself the best chance of succeeding? If one of those goals for you is learning a new language, or even just a little bit of a language to enhance your next trip, you should absolutely get Babbel. They have quick 10-minute lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts. You can actually start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. It's designed by real people for real conversations, exactly what you want as a traveler. I just downloaded it and went into the Norwegian course area thinking, oh, I've got this. Immediately made a bunch of grammar mistakes that they corrected. And I was like, oh, I've been doing this wrong. So I'm already leveling up and learning. And you can get Babbel now. Here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/zerototravel. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/zerototravel, spelled BABBEL.com/zerototravel. Rules and restrictions may apply. Thank you to Babbel for supporting today's show. Hey, Jason here. Did you know we have a free weekly newsletter over at zerototravel.com/newsletter? I put my heart and soul into this newsletter and love keeping in touch with listeners off the podcast. That's where you can find out about all of the latest and greatest events, trips we're planning, and of course, you're going to get money-saving travel tips, destination advice, all kinds of stuff to provide value and help you add more travel into your life. So why not sign up? Again, totally free, no cost at all. zerototravel.com/newsletter. Excited to welcome you into that community. Thanks for listening. Now, back to the show. What's an ideal day like that look like for you? Do you journal? Are you hanging out? You know, you're with people all day, so are you just taking a hike? What do you like to do?
Yeah, I like to walk. I just love to walk. That's my favorite thing to do. And so if I'm in a natural area, I love to hike. I don't want, you know, people always like, do you want to, well, we'll schedule a massage. We'll have dinner. I'm like, I don't want any plans. So for me right away to have nothing on my schedule, that feels great, where the whole day is just where I want to go with it. It's usually a really long walk or a hike. I love cities and just to wander and to go into their neighborhoods and choose a cafe because I think it looks good, not because it's been yelped at or, you know, whatever. I just want to kind of feel a place. And I love doing that. And yeah, I do journal. I've got a notebook and I love the writing. And I love to wander and ruminate. I love it. That's my favorite thing to do. Yeah. Yeah.
Nice. I mean, you live in the city that I think, I always say, just taking a long walk in New York City is one of the best travel experiences. Just walking anywhere, it doesn't even matter. You just go, and I mean, you're going to see all kinds of aspects of humanity and culture and places. It is the best. So you're in the spot. I know this is hard to quantify, but who's somebody who's had a really huge impact on your life?
I love Rick Steves. He's had a huge impact. We're good friends. And just kind of seeing his career. There are times where I question, okay, what should I do? What should I be doing right now? And then I'll see what he's doing. And so I really respect him. I know him personally, and he's even better than he is on TV. And he's just this man who's basically gotten to do what he's wanted to do. And I learn a lot from that. And so I feel like just in terms of what I do and in the travel space, he's someone who I deeply respect and really value as a person.
We're fortunate to have him on the show. And, you know, I've been a big Rick Steves fan for a long time. And so when he came here to update his guidebook, and he was kind enough to let me tag along with him for a few hours. And that was quite an experience because, yeah, we were like riding bikes and he's updating his thing. And then we walked into a restaurant that he was scouting out for the book. Yeah. And a table of like 50 people were there from the travel convention, and they went nuts. And I thought, oh my gosh, yeah, this is like, you must have to deal with these situations. I don't want to say deal with, because that's, but you know, as being a personality, somebody who's out there quite a bit and known, you have these things that happen, I'm sure, as you go around. How has that been for you? Like the celebrity part of it. I can use air quotes there, but you know,
yeah.
I mean, it's something you have to get used to, right? I'm sure it's.
Yeah. I would say that it's really
time?
Easy. Yeah. No, and I'm not that big of a celebrity, which I really appreciate. There was a time, kind of the height of my Travel Channel career, where, you know, if I was doing like a Disney World shoot and I had cameras, so it's very obvious, who is she? Oh, it's that. And just being inundated and never being able just to stop, and people taking pictures of you while you're eating. It's a very, very strange experience. I did not enjoy it at all, and I don't miss it at all. And so I've never walked into a room and 50 people just explode. I've walked in and people are like, oh my gosh, I love your show. So it's really lovely. I love my celebrity. It's nice. I can still walk wherever I want to. I can, you know, I'm pretty much a normal person. So I don't have to make any changes or adjustments. And neither does Rick. I mean, Rick Steves he doesn't like cordon himself off. He is just, you know, just such a lovely person that, he is the person we all want to strive to be more like.
Doing all this while raising children and having a family, and maybe this is a selfish question because I have, like I said, a 5 and 7 year old, you know, how do you balance that? How have you balanced that? Or what have you learned? I mean, it's probably impossible to balance. Maybe that's the wrong way to word it. But what has the whole thing taught you trying to do something that fulfills you in terms of your creativity, your heart and soul, the things that you want to do, and being out in the world as a traveler, as somebody who's, you know, wanting to share travel with others? And then you have the responsibilities, the familial responsibilities and things like that. And I find that that's that can be a tough conundrum for anybody. Like whether you travel or not, you know, trying to balance your sort of your personal fulfilling hobbies and or career with family stuff. What's your advice, or what have you learned?
I knew I needed to get back into my job as soon as after I had kids. Unfortunately, women, we need to work right away or we'll just be forgotten, right? So, and that was tough, but I love my job. And it became tough because I would leave, and they were like, I don't know, by the time they were like 8 months, I would leave for like 2 weeks at a time, you know? And
yeah,
that's really
right.
Hard. And and I missed them, and I felt terrible, but then I loved what I got to do. And I just knew it's going to be tough for a while. They'll understand. They have so much love, believe me. It's not like they're alone. They have their father, right, who's there. and then when they were old enough to ask, I would never say, oh, I have to leave and I don't want to go. I would always say, you know, it's tough for me to go, but mommy has a really great job and she loves it. I love what I get to do. And so I explained it to them so they'd understand. And so it was hard to balance. And now I'll be like, Jason, I'll be like, oh my gosh, I'm sorry. Tomorrow I'm going to Norway. I'm sorry, guys. I'm going to Norway tomorrow. and they're just like, yeah, okay, whatever. And so right. It's very funny. I'm like, oh my God, I forgot to tell you, I'm going to Australia. Next week, I'm going to be in Australia. So it does become very normal to them. They're great travelers, you know, for a while before, you know, school started, where I can't take them out of school, unfortunately. They've traveled so many great places. And so they're really lucky in that respect, too. So, you know, for a while, it's a little hard. But I always find that, like you said at the beginning, you know, parenthood is so hard and you just feel like you have no idea what you're doing, that it's really important for us to do what we love and what we're very confident in, because that builds like, oh my gosh, I need to go where I feel like I actually know what I'm doing, which is more of my professional life. So, yeah. But
Yeah. It makes you a better parent to get fulfilled in that way. But also I did think there's something with, it's a big lesson for kids to see their parent can have a life, and that they can do something they love too, and that you can. Well, it seems like you've really been able to combine not everybody's able to pull this off, your authentic self and your things that you love personally with your career, and that's no small feat.
Yes, exactly. So I wasn't going to let that go, and I knew, you know, year after year, if you're not still in there, that becomes, you know, what happens. And I don't know if a lot of your listeners know, but with the PBS model, the public television model, they don't give us any money. I and my husband, we together raise all of our own funding, create a travel show, and give it back to public television for free. So it's hard, but then we own the television show. So I'm also the owner and executive producer of a travel series. So it was more about owning my whole life, where if I was with a network, they would be in control of that. And that became too difficult for, you know, anything else. So me being able to control my, like when I travel, that's huge, because like I'm the boss. And there are times where I'm like, man, it's me. Like before I could complain to a producer, I'm like, this is ridiculous. I'm like, oh my gosh, I did this to myself. So, who do I have to talk to get
that's
the,
always
you know,
the best.
Yeah. But so I think they're very proud of me. I know they love what I get to do, and they get to join me, and they love it. And so it's worked out, but it was a lot of hard work in the beginning.
Was that a big decision point for you to go from the employed host to the entrepreneur? That's what you did. You had to kind of completely change model. Did you have to make a big mindset shift? Was that a tough time?
It is jumping off a cliff and building your wings on the way down. Yeah. I just feel like there was a time where, and with the Travel Channel, it just wasn't what it was all cracked up to be in the end. And it was hard. And I just thought, I am so tired of being at the whim of other people, and nothing against them. They're the bosses. They're paying me, but it was just so tough. And so I just thought, okay, there's this other way. And we got to talk to Rick Steves and like, well, what do we do? Like, how is it? So I wouldn't say he mentored us, but he gave us really valuable advice. And then from there, we went to the next person and get the next valuable advice. And then we just worked slowly and got to do this travel show that is now our 7th season. But yeah, I mean, you're putting a lot of your own money into it until it can get up on its feet. And, it's just like, let's hope that. But what I love about what I did is for so long, I was interviewing people who do the exact same thing I do. Anyone who has a small business, that's exactly what they do. They put their life savings into something. They know they can do it, and then it works out. And so it was like one of those things, well, why can't I do that? And so we did. And it's amazing. It's a lot of hard work. I always joke that I'm like, I used to be able to say like, hey, I need a cup of coffee. And now I'm the one who has to get the whole crew a cup of coffee, because like, it doesn't matter that I'm the host. There was a time where that meant something in the hierarchy of a crew, like, oh, the host, she gets what she wants. And no, I don't get, but I get to work with the people I love. Most of the people that I work with, I've worked with for 17 to 20 years. Unbelievable. So they're people that I trust, who I trust. And it's paid off. A lot of hard work, a lot of sleepless nights, not just with kids, like, oh gosh, what did we do? But it paid off.
The host/intern.
Yes, exactly. That's how I feel sometimes.
Let's ask you about some destinations. You've been to a few places. I think people know that.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to ask you for your favorites or anything like that, because like you said, those are cop out
questions.
I'm not going to go.
Yeah.
They're a little lazy questions. Let's be honest. Yeah. No, I'm kidding. Yeah. But I would like to hear two or three destinations that you've been to that you've always would love to go back to, or you'd love to go back to if you have. Because I think for travelers who like to explore and check out new things, it is in some ways the ultimate compliment to a destination to be like, yes, I'm willing to spend my time and money to go back to a place that I've been before. What stands out for you?
Well, one destination I've returned to many times, both professionally and personally, I've brought my mom there, I brought my sister there, separate trips, is Santa Fe, New Mexico. There's something about being in New Mexico that's really magical. You know, it's just a confluence of cultures from Native American, Spanish, early American. Margaritas are very good there. Phenomenal art scene. It's just really got it all. And it's this beautiful, beautiful place. So I love Santa Fe. The other one I would love to return to, and looks like this year we might be able to go back, is China. I love China, and I love working with the Chinese. I think as a culture, it's a fascinating culture to get to know. And I love the idea that I have no idea what's going on. It's just, for me, like almost absurdity. And yet I've got to figure it out, right? I've got to figure it, because I'm in there and, you know, on their turf. And I love that. But I love just sitting. I've been to China many times and I miss it. I miss going there. You just learn so much about yourself being in very different places. So those would be just at the top of my head, both domestic and international. And then, you know, then I went to Norway for the first time last year, summer of 2023. And brought my kids. And oh, did we love it? And you love it because you are, I made sure we didn't go to any of, the major Viking museum is closed. I think it's opening up soon, but it's been closed for a few years. So I was like, well, you know what? Let's just walk around and kind of go where the day takes us. And we loved it. We hopped on trams that ran beautifully, like our New York subway system. But I just love those, like, well, what is day-to-day life like in another place? And so those are some tops.
Yes, we really do keep our babies outside in the cold rather than in the cafe drinking coffee.
That's awesome.
No, that took some getting used to, Samantha.
Yeah, like, that's crazy.
It is. I mean, yeah, you can. It's not like you go away and you can't see them. But even still, the kids sleep outside. So when it first started happening, and all right, we got to get the sleeping bag, and then I put my daughter in there, and then we just push her around, and then when she falls asleep, it's like, okay, now we're just gonna leave her outside. And we're going to go inside, and then she's going to sleep. And it's just like, what? It's not not something we were used to growing up in the States. I appreciate a lot of those parts of Norwegian culture now, and just the connection with nature. And now it explains a lot how strong the connection is. I mean, you grow up sleeping outside, of course, you're probably going to be more subconsciously more connected to nature in some way. When you were describing I think the word you used was absurdity of being in China. It was almost like you were describing improv comedy too, like in that situation where you just don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what's going on around you, because that's something that are you still involved with the comedy sketch group? Is that something you still do?
Oh, I wish. No, no. But I did an improv group way back in like 92, I think. I think that's why I love China. It's more, it is, and I don't say absurdity in a negative way. Like absurdist theater is some of my favorite theater, because when you're in a destination where nothing is familiar, I think just you can't hold on anymore, right? And all of a sudden, those walls kind of dissipate of you trying to figure out what's going on, and then just a new meaning arises. And in fact, you just kind of go with it and have fun. Where if I'm in Norway, well, I know that a little bit I'm going to have to, you know, I'm probably of Europe, right? So I'm like, I should get this, but it's something like I feel there's pressure for me to understand everything about this society. But when I'm in China, none of that expectation is on me. And I can just be like a five-year-old, just being an absolute delight of everything that's happening. Where I feel like if I'm in anywhere in Europe, like people are watching me and like, oh, they're the American. They don't know what they're doing. they're ignorant. I'm like, no, I'm not ignorant. I just, this is a different life for me. So I feel like in China, you can just, it's just fascinating. It's just like, I feel like it's like being like the tourism version of like being an IndyCar 500, you know, race car driver. It's just, whoa, this is shoom, 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 shoom. You know, things are going by so fast and it's awesome. You just got to go with it. All right. So
is there a culture you feel super connected with for whatever reason that let's say the whole family and you got kicked out of New York tomorrow and you had to move somewhere and live there for 5 years? Where would you go?
New Zealand, beautiful, yeah, okay. Beautiful culture. So far away though, but it's just the people there really truly are like the loveliest people in the world. And I just enjoyed it on so many levels. You know, it's the newest land, I think, on Earth, right? It's still kind of forming. It was, and so you're seeing the Earth processes still happening, and you realize, oh, we are just so young on this Earth. And then you have its own, the Maori who are there, you know, they're, you know, are Aboriginals who just have this wisdom. And then you have, you know, the basically the Europeans who came over who are just lovely. So you just have this whole confluence of great just people, and they're islanders. And so they know they have to kind of stick up for each other. And so they're in it with each other. So I thought during COVID, I would have fantasies of just moving there and just like living on a farm, you know, taking care of sheep, you know, picking wine grapes. I don't know. I'll volunteer for anything. So I love that. And I love New Zealand. And my other favorite was Nicaragua. I loved Nicaragua. I felt really at home there. And I haven't been back in a long time. But when I went, it was also this time where people are like, oh, it's dangerous. You know, there's this whole, for Americans, there's this whole, you shouldn't travel there. It's really annoying because I feel like that's not what's really happening. And I felt the people were there lovely. And I was like, wow, this is really, it's just comfortable. You just feel comfortable in your own skin there. I like that too. So very, very different places, but Nicaragua, my parents wouldn't be so disappointed. I think they'd be very upset if we moved the whole family to New Zealand. That's kind of far. It's a big flight, big lift.
Along those lines, you mentioned, when you were talking about Nicaragua, just the perception in terms of travel media and narratives. What do you think travel media can do better to better represent places?
I mean, I think it's really great to follow intrepid travelers, right? That are going to these places and they're experiencing it in real time, not as a State Department who's going to be overly conservative when it comes to your safety. I mean, I always find it interesting when these places are given sort of like, oh, don't travel there, it could be dangerous, when the United States isn't exactly perceived as a very safe place to be with our gun safety and all of that. And so it's interesting when we kind of apply it to other people, maybe we should think about ourselves and kind of our own people's perception of life here, which I like, people are like, oh, everyone. So when I, outside of Brooklyn, people are like, isn't it dangerous? Are you okay? I'm like, yeah, we're fine. Isn't there a lot of crime there? I'm like, it's New York City. Yes. You know, it's, yeah, of course, but no, we're fine. So I guess I tend to take that stuff with a grain of salt. And I think it's important just to follow people who are still, you know, out there traveling. For me, it's difficult because I have a team of 8 and 9 that I need to bring there. And so it's just becomes expensive, or it becomes like, oh, we're not traveling during the time we should be going there. There's all these reasons why we're going to some places and not other places. But yeah, I would just, if I was, I would, so with Nicaragua, like I have friends that were just there and they loved it. And they're like, and I think the State Department gave it a rating of cautionary or something like that. And it's just like, is that true? Or like, what does that mean? And no one really knows. So, you know.
Yeah. Was there an act of kindness that you experienced on the road that always stuck with you?
Oh gosh. Yes. Yeah. I think the biggest one was in China. And I was there for about a month filming in 2007, which was right before their big Olympics in Beijing. And It was a really long day, and we were filming, and we stopped to have dinner. I don't even know where, but I was so tired, didn't want to eat, that I just went for a walk. There I go. I love to walk. And it was this really industrial kind of strange place, but I knew I was okay. And I made it to this little square where there were lots of people, and there were children playing and couples talking, and there were older people doing their exercises. And I thought, okay, this is nice. And because I was just so caught up in all the tourism of China, and it was just nice to be where people lived and where people were. And as I was sitting there, just kind of being a part of normal life in China, two little girls, like 10 years old, roller skated over to me, and they started speaking to me in Chinese. And I said, I'm sorry. No Chinese. And they kind of looked at each other, and they roller skated away. And then they came back and they said, name. And I said, oh, name, I'm Sam. And then I said, name, and pointed to them, and they said their names, and they giggled, and they roller skated away. And then they came back, from. I said, oh, I'm from the United States. I said, but I love being in China. And this continued for a while. Like, clearly someone spoke English. They saw me and they're like, she's probably from the West. She's either Canadian or Australian or American. And this is how you introduce yourself. But it was this lovely conversation. I started to feel better. And so I was like, oh, I need to get back, because I never told my producers I was leaving. And I think they'd be worried. And so as I was leaving, I hear my name. Sam, you know, in the middle of this place. And I turn, and it's the girls, and they roller skate up to me. And one raises her hand and she just shouts, my friend. And in that moment, I just melted. And like all of this negativity I had been feeling, because I was really at that point, like, I think I'm done with this job. Like, I'm tired. I didn't even have a boyfriend. Like, I wanted to have kids. Like, what am I doing traveling 220 days out of the year? And that little girl in China, it was that act of kindness that I will never, ever, ever forget. And that's what I'm always looking for when I go for my walks. And I think that's what that walk is about, is really letting the place just kind of slowly reveal itself to me, and to have those moments that I would totally miss, like waiting in line for, you know, a cronut or something like that. You know, I just want to, I'm always looking for that moment again. But that was the best. Yeah.
Beautiful story. Thank you. Thanks for sharing that. That's probably a good place to end. I have one or two more selfish questions. I want to get some interviewing advice, because I have you here.
Sure.
And you've done countless interviews. What is your best advice for me? Lay it on me.
Oh, gosh. For interviews?
Yeah, for interviewing.
Yeah, I think you've got it. You just really, you're really interested in the person you want to talk to. Like, you really want to learn something from them, because they can pick up, and I can pick up right away when it's just like an interview. And I'm sure you've done them too. I do them a lot, where I'm like, I'm just clearly answering these standard questions that they need. And so I think you just show up for the person. It's always about making eye contact. Eye contact is really important, and truly being interested in the other person. Another thing I try to do, and I'm still working on this, Jason, is I let the, and you did this with me, you did this so lovely, you let me talk all the way through. You didn't jump in with another, you know, question quickly. Like, you can let people pause, you can let that. And I think that's something that we really struggle with in talking. We think we need to fill in that space. And sometimes it's just letting that space be there, that another thought arises and that sort of thing. So that's my big thing. I try to just calm down when I'm asking a question and understand that, like, a silence is okay. Like, a pause is okay. I don't need to fill that pause.
That's great advice. Thank you for that. The 20 plus year career, what do you think is the biggest lesson you've learned in your career doing all this?
I love that. I think it's that travel, and I say this a lot. I give speaking engagements, and this is how I end the speech, because it's still so true, is that travel is one of the few things that we have in our lives that mark a fresh start. It's a new beginning. And it doesn't matter if you're traveling 10,000 miles away to China or 2 hours from your home, it's a fresh start. And we're all on this journey to understand ourselves, who we are as human beings, and to be better than we thought, right? For our communities, for our friends, for our families. And nothing gives us that opportunity like travel. I truly believe that. Travel really allows us to be our best selves. And that's why I feel like it's a necessity, not a luxury. And that's my goal with Places to Love, is to show that it doesn't, you don't have to spend thousands upon thousands of dollars. You don't have to have first class tickets. You don't have to have the glass of champagne overlooking the Grand Canyon from a helicopter trip. Like, most of what we try to do in our show is to balance those A-list destinations and then the B-sides. I call them the B-sides. You know, records, you have an A-side and a B-side, because those B-sides really allow you to, I think, savor more. And they are a third of the cost of, you know, the big marquee destinations, but they give you so much value for your life. And so that's the biggest lesson, is that it's not how much money you spend. It's not how far you go. Travel is an important step in our lives, and it's a necessity.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I love your work. I love what you do. And obviously PBS is where they can find the show, but should people go to your website to kind of find the links to everything? Is that sort of the hub that you would send people, samantha-brown.com?
Absolutely. So you can easily go to PBS, but it's also samantha-brown.com. You could stream all of my shows. So sometimes people don't even have PBS, or if you're just streaming, all of my shows are available to stream on my website, and just click on TV and they're all there.
Huge congrats. I mean, now that you've kind of explained the model of pulling off this whole other season, I can only imagine how much work was involved. So huge congrats on
thank you
on your seventh and the Emmys yes. and all the others. I mean, that's really incredible, and wishing you all the best and continued success. And hope we can have another chat at some point down the road. And I hope we can do it in person on a long walk through New York.
Yes. No, I'd like to join you in Oslo, Norway. No, I don't think you're in Oslo, but I'd love to come back to
Norway.
I am
in Oslo.
Absolutely.
I am in Oslo.
Oh, you are in Oslo. All right.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
That's a great city.
And you
city.
Can say it however you want, Samantha. You can say it however you want.
Oh my gosh. I loved it. I love it.
Thank you. Thank you
Thank
so
you,
much.
Jason. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
There you have it. I want to thank Samantha Brown for taking the time to come on the show. I mean, how lucky am I to get to have Samantha here and have that conversation with her? What a joy it was. And congrats to her on all of her success. Of course, one last time I'll mention Samantha Brown's Places to Love, returning for its seventh season. And if you want to find all the links and the things, go to her website. That's the best place to get connected with her. Now, I'm going to leave you with a quote from Samantha to wrap this one up. I love this quote. First, one last reminder, zerototravel.com/newsletter. If you're not signed up for the free newsletter over there, then you are missing out, my friend, on travel tips and destination news. I try to share some of the latest trends, a whole bunch of stuff, and it's free. And it's how you can connect with me and with the community off the pod. So you can sign up over there. Again, that's totally free. Okay, this quote from Samantha. Love this. Quote, travel can be anywhere. It's not measured in miles. End quote. So true. Travel can be anywhere. So take a trip today. It can be anywhere. It can be right where you are right now. Take a trip today, whatever that means to you. Have a wonderful rest of your day, evening, night. And I'll see you next time. Peace and love to you and yours. Cheers.
This podcast has been brought to you by ZeroToTravel.com. Ideas and advice to make your travel dreams a reality.